we're going to move on to our next speaker, who is Dean Adler. Dean is the co-founder of Lubert Adler Real Estate Fund. He has spoken on our program previously. He's going to discuss today what's happening next in real estate. Dean, please go ahead.
Thank you, Larry. We're going to address the impact of the pandemic on the real estate industry, basically who thrived and who died, and what these and whether these impacts will be temporary or permanent going forward. So let's just take a look back, called the pandemic period, March 15th, 2020, to an estimated September 2021. At the outset of the pandemic, certain real estate segments were absolutely crushed. Brick and mortar retailers, the occupancy of people going to work in offices, hotels, travel, all closed down. And also we had a closing down of the restaurants, gyms, theaters, and major events. During the first 3 months of this pandemic period, the real estate market entered a period of severe dislocation. There really was no transparency as to what the future looked like. The capital markets relatively froze. The public REIT stocks dropped significantly, particularly in the hotel, retail, and office sectors. As in other real estate downturns, and basically real estate goes through a cycle every 10 years, 1981, 1991, 2001, 2009, and 21, certain opportunities present themselves to what we call the real estate opportunistic investors. In this case, the early distress opportunities included the following. Number one, recapping distressed hotel owners who did not set aside capital to pay debt service and the operating expenses. And many of these hotel owners funded their money from family and friends, and when it came to calling money from these limited partners, they basically said, no mas, we're not contributing. So that was one source of what we call rescue capital opportunities. Number two, many owners of assets that were just going to start the redevelopment process of taking an older building and making it alive lost their redevelopment capital and lost their financing. So those who had capital to go in and invest at that cycle really got in at a very favorable basis. Number three, there's a whole Wall Street debt fund lenders, basically industries where these lenders would borrow short off a repo and make long-term loans. And when the capital markets froze, many of these lenders blew up due to leveraging their loans with repo paper. And basically the repo paper got marked to market, they didn't have the capital, and they had to move assets out. And finally, many of the public shares of hotels, offices, and retailers were at perhaps all-time lows. Interesting enough, but despite this early period, there was not a significant amount of activity for buying distressed debt or buying foreclosed assets as the lenders across the board provided forbearance to most borrowers, and they gave moratoriums to allow, to basically allow people to wade through this period. On the other side of the distress, there were certain segments of the real estate sector that boomed. The logistics, Amazon, and hear this, Amazon went on a, what I'll call a real estate boom, where basically in every major market, talking about 50, 60 markets, Amazon went on a movement where they were going to add up to 2.5 million square feet of distribution centers. You know, they would do about 15, what I'll call distribution centers of 150,000 square feet each, and they'd have one or two 1 million square foot warehouses. So this was an area which was really booming. Number two, you also saw a similar boom in the life science industry and the data center industry. Look at Cambridge, MIT, and look at the explosion that's happened here. And the third group that benefited significantly were the grocery chains, who basically no longer had restaurants as their competition for this period, and they ended up achieving far superior returns because they were the really only source of town for food. And we'll discuss the grocery a little later. So that's sort of looking back on this last year. Going forward, the impact of this pandemic has potentially altered how we will work, how we're going to live, and how we're going to play, shop, and travel, all in one category, in the future. So let's address each of these four categories. Number one, work. The pandemic highlighted the success of online connectivity from remote locations. This, going forward, has raised two questions. How will people work in the future? What will their office needs and space require? And number two, where will they work? We believe at Lubert Adler that the urban office buildings will change moderately and must adapt, and there will continue to be exodus from big city gateway markets will continue, albeit not as dramatic as people may think. So let's first address the office space. The office space will become more of a sense of place where team members can come up and meet and collaborate and want to come to the office because they want to personally see someone. And at the same time, the office space is going to have to be more flexible because there will be a number of workers who can work remotely or don't have to be in 5 days a week. And so the space has to accommodate a much more flexible workforce. I think you can see a lot more activity where people come in 3 to 4 days a week, not 5 to 6, and the space needs to accommodate that. In addition, I think there's been a heightened awareness for healthy buildings. And for the last 30 years, we've always talked about making healthy office buildings, but it never really resonated. I think it resonates now. I think having fresh air, the right air infiltration system, sustainable materials, and outdoor space will separate those, what I'll call the Class A buildings, and the next tier buildings. Secondly, I think firms will consider more than ever to move divisions to lower cost markets. It's not just because of the cheaper office rent, it's because their employees can't afford housing in San Francisco, in New York, in Boston, in Washington. You know, it's not equal across the board. So I think you're going to see more and more firms take divisions, and they'll move from those divisions, particularly with the accelerated technology and connectivity, they'll be able to move them from the gateway markets, San Francisco, New York, and Boston, to what I'll call the emerging markets with lower costs of living, better services, which include Austin, Miami, Charlotte, Dallas, Salt Lake, among others. For the investors who invest in office, I think it's a real tough slug ahead. We were oversupplied pre-pandemic, plus the WeWorks of the world sucked up space based on future demand that will not be there. So I think you will see, in particular in places like New York, rents are going to flatten out, but expenses are going to rise. Think about the services that are going to need to be provided, and the vacancies will rise. And you know, buildings such as the B buildings, which were sort of older 1980s buildings, I believe will get crushed and will need alternative uses, and we'll have real markdowns on valuations. Let's move on to living. And living, I'm going to call multifamily rentals and single-family homes. Number one, the urban apartments were initially impacted significantly by the pandemic, because why would you rent an apartment when you're not working in town? But just recently, you're now gathering steam where these apartments are going to be released as people anticipate going back to work. And we expect this to rebound, although it may take a few years to rebound, and it's going to be at flat rents. There's no reason why rents would escalate. Number two, the suburban single-family market, both from sales and rentals, soared with bidding wars again. I think look for this to continue, but I think the real hot, what I'll call the hot area, is going to be the inner ring suburbs. I think you're going to see a lot of the millennials move out, not all the way to to real McMansions way out, I think they're going to look for these inner ring suburbs, and I think they're going to come alive again. And finally, when we look to build an apartment building, a retrofit, there's going to be new relevant amenities. Number one, you got to promote fresh. You're not going to promote just the rooftop bar and all the F&B and the activity. You're going to emphasize fresh air. You're going to emphasize indoor-outdoor space. You're going to emphasize in your room we'll have superior at-home connectivity in case you stay home. Or in each building we'll have Zoom rooms, not like the old cheesy business offices you see in most of these facilities. Real Zoom rooms so you can stay home and work. And then also the whole marketing program is going to change. I think this pandemic has really highlighted, you know, how social media is really the premier area of marketing and advertisement. Interesting enough, apartment landlords are very old school, almost lazy, and they're going to have to really adapt to meet to really figure out how to market and connect with their customers via social media. Let's finally talk about play, shop, and travel. Live, work, play, shop, and travel. On the shop side, brick-and-mortar retail is a falling knife and actually accelerated during the pandemic. And you know, one reason just simply is, I'll give you an example of grocery, which never really was impacted by online. But during the pandemic, customers who never ordered online were forced to do so. And guess what? They liked it. Groups like Amazon, Instacart, F&B delivery boomed. And they left many carcasses, unfortunately, behind. I think you're going to see traditional brick and mortar continue to be crushed. We started with 1,200 malls, you know, a few hundred years ago. I think we'll be down to 200, from 1,200 to 200. And unfortunately, look at urban main streets. Look at Madison Avenue. Look at Walnut Street in Philadelphia. You could have 30, 40% vacancies. And on the one hand, you could say it's because the rents were sold so high. On the other hand, you got to ask yourself, if these retailers are moving out, who's moving in? What type of retailers? Because not many brick-and-mortar retailers are even being created today. And what are the ramifications if our first floors of our urban areas are 50% vacant? May have a real impact. Finally, hospitality, select service with low overhead will come back first. The drive-to resorts are thriving because people want to go somewhere and they don't want to get in the airplane. Business and group hotels are several years away. And the international will come back, but it's going to be the longest to recovery. And interesting, you know, all the hospitality markets are going to come back. The one who's hurt the most is New York. You may see 20 to 25% closed hotels, not only due to no business, but because of the high union labor costs. So if you're a full-service hotel in New York, you got a really, really tough hoe to go forward. So in sum, the pandemic had a significant impact on real estate. Owners must adjust to the changes of the pandemic and look at this both, you know, as an adjustment but an opportunity. If they adapt, my belief real estate is still a very attractive asset class because it has the ability to generate very strong current yields in a world with little to no yield.
Dean, thank you.